Hello, this is Greg Braden with Fractal Time, the secret of 2012 and a new world age. Ancient traditions viewed time as a never-ending dance of cycles, great waves of energy that pulse across the universe, linking the past and the future in their journey. Today, modern science seems to agree. In the language of physics, time merges with the space it travels through to create something called space-time, the vast ripples in the quantum ocean that makes the universe and everything in it possible. Well, a growing body of evidence suggests that time's waves and the history they contain repeat as cycles within cycles. As each new cycle begins, it carries the same conditions as the past, but with a greater intensity. It's this fractal time that becomes the things we experience as the universe and life. Using a code we're only beginning to understand, the ancient Maya charted fractal time on a series of calendars unlike anything the world has ever seen. Because they understood the cycles, they also knew that the conditions of the future are etched into the record of the past. This includes the mysterious date that ends the present world age we're living today, December 21st, 2012. The key to the mystery of 2012 and the understanding of what it means is to know how to read the map of time. For the next few hours, we'll do just that. I invite you to join me as we rediscover time as the language of our past and the map to our future. Through ancient traditions, leading-edge science, new discoveries, and true life accounts. Introduction. We're living the end of time. Not the end of the world, but the end of a world age, a 5,125-year-long cycle of time, and the way we've known the world throughout that time. The present world age began in 3114 B.C., and will end in 2012 A.D. And because the end of anything also marks the beginning of what comes next, we're also living the start of what follows the end of time, the next world age, which ancient traditions called the next great cycle. From the epic poems of India's Mahabharata to the oral traditions of indigenous Americans and the biblical story of Revelation, those who have come before us knew that the end of time was coming. They knew because it always does. Every 5,125 years, the Earth and our solar system reach a place in their journey through the heavens that marks the end of precisely such a cycle. And with that end, a new world age begins. Apparently, it's always been this way. For at least four such cycles, or even five, according to the Mesoamerican traditions of the Aztec and the Mayan people, our ancestors endured the changes that come at the end of time. Changes in the Earth's magnetic fields, in the climate, the depletion of resources, the melting of polar ice, and the rising of sea levels. And they did so without the help of satellites and the internet or computer models to help them prepare for such a radical shift. The fact that they lived to tell the story stands as a powerful testament to an undeniable truth. It tells us, beyond any reasonable doubt, that the inhabitants of our world have survived the end of world ages in the past. But beyond simply surviving, they learned from the difficulties that can accompany the change. In the words of their day, those who have come before us did their very best to tell us what it means to live such a rare moment in history. And it's a good thing they did, because such events are few and far between. Only five generations in the last 26,000 years have experienced the shift of world ages. We will be the sixth. The present world age isn't something that will simply fade away into the sunset of a time that seems to perpetually linger out there somewhere in our future. Just the opposite. Our world age has an expiration date. It ends at a specific time, with a specific event, on a day that was marked on a calendar over 2,000 years ago. And there's no secret to that date. The Maya who calculated it also inscribed it as a permanent record for future generations. It's etched into stone monuments that were built to last until the end of time and beyond. Using the format of the ancient long count calendar, the system of timekeeping that the Maya developed to track extremely long periods of time, The Last Day of the Present World Age is written as a 5-part code. Read from left to right, each part has a unique name that represents increasingly smaller units of time. The leftmost unit is the Baktun and represents 144,000 days. Moving right, the Katun represents 7,200 days, the Tun, 360 days, and the Yuanal, 20 days, and the Kin, 1 day. The leftmost unit is the Baktun and represents 144,000 days. Moving to the right, the Katun represents 7,200 days, the Tun, 360 days, the Yuanal, 20 days, and the Kin, 1 day. With this code in mind, the Mayan calendar places the end date of our world age at 13.0.0.0.0. In other words, 13 Baktun cycles and 0 cycles for the rest of the units. When this date is translated to our familiar system of time, the message becomes clear. It tells us that our present world age will end with the winter solstice that takes place on December 21st in the year 2012. It's on this date that the mysterious Maya identified the astonishing astronomical events that will mark the end of our world age, and they did so over 2 millennia ago. Throughout this audiobook, I will summarize the key points I'll call time codes that will help to keep track of what's important in the various sections. Time code 1 does just that and reminds us that we're living the completion of a 5,125-year-long cycle of time, a world age that the ancient Maya calculated would end with the winter solstice on December 21st, 2012. To put into perspective just how rare the ending of such a cycle really is, the last humans to witness the shift from one world age to the next lived in the year 3114 BC, about 1700 years before the time of Moses and the biblical Exodus. It's only recently that the meaning of a world age has made sense to modern scientists. Although the countdown to the end of time is etched deeply into our unconscious psyche, the conditions that it brings are only now being recognized by the scientific disciplines that range from geology and oceanography to astronomy and climatology. The reason scientists seem to be so late in jumping on the 2012 bandwagon is because of technology, or the lack of it. Only in the last 60 years or so have we had the computers, the satellites, and the remote sensing equipment that could verify the connection between the end of a world age and the changes it brings to our lives. From that verification, we now understand that everything from the global climate, patterns of war and peace, and even our own spiritual growth, all appear to be directly influenced by the planetary changes that are now documented by the best science of today. Just the way we're cautioning future generations about our 20th century experiences of nuclear weapons and global warming, the civilizations of our past cautioned us about their experience of the end of time, having just lived the end of the last great cycle in their day. The people of the earth did what humans do following an epic event that forever changes their lives. They recorded what happened for future generations. In doing so, they ensured that we would know what to expect as well as how to prepare, and our ancestors did it from direct experience. Over 51 centuries ago, our ancestors did their very best to inform and warn us of what they knew would be an era of powerful transition in the future they could only imagine in their dreams. That era is now, and the transition has already begun. To understand their message, to understand our journey through the heavens in time, and it's all about cycles. Time code 2 reminds us that our ancestors recorded their experience of the last end of time, showing us beyond reasonable doubt that the close of one world age is the beginning of the next and not the end of the world. The very nature of a cycle is that it repeats itself. So every time the end of one cycle appears, by definition, it's also the beginning of the next. The key here is that to get to the beginning of what's new, the cycle must pass through the end of what already exists. And while this repeating nature of cycles is obvious on the small scale of things like seasons of the year and phases of the moon, it's not always so obvious when we're talking about cosmic cycles like solar systems moving through the galaxy. This is where the message of our Mayan ancestors comes in. They recognized the nature of time cycles long before science described our journey through the heavens. Their timekeepers preserved what they knew and incorporated it in the stories about the universe and life, non-scientific descriptions of creation and destruction, birth and death, beginnings and endings. While the specifics regarding the end of time vary across tradition, culture, and religious belief, there's a common theme that seems to run through all of them, almost universally. Ancient predictions for our time in history describe an age filled with an epic darkness. From the Hindu descriptions of the great yugas to the Mayan long count marking the remaining days of the current great cycle, the close of our age has been prophesied, predicted, feared, and anticipated as an era of war, suffering, excess, and inequality. And while these descriptions sound ominous, there is a bright side. Although the darkness appears to be necessary, it also appears to be brief. The reason? Physically, our solar system is moving through the shortest part of an orbit called an ellipse. The shape is important because it looks like a flattened circle, and our journey has carried us to the most distant point in our orbit from the center of our home galaxy, the Milky Way. Both ancient traditions and modern science tell us that our location in this cyclic orbit determines how we experience the powerful sources of energy that radiate from our galaxy's core, energy like the massive magnetic fields that have been recently discovered there. New studies suggest that it's precisely such cycles that influence the quality of life on Earth and may explain the mysterious rise and fall of life here on our planet, even the mass extinctions that happened 250 and 450 million years ago. Additionally, modern discoveries now confirm that our planet's position throughout the journey, things like orbit, tilt, and wobble, create the ever-changing cycles that influence everything from the temperature and climate to polar ice and the magnetic fields of Earth. We'll discuss the details of these throughout this audiobook. The key here is that our location in these cycles also appears to have a direct emotional and spiritual effect upon us. As we travel further from our galaxy's core, the same ancient traditions that describe the cycles also describe how we sense our distance from the galaxy's energy source as a sense of a loss of connection, one that we experience both spiritually and emotionally. Scientific links between the quality of Earth's magnetic fields, how they're affected by cosmic conditions, and our sense of well-being seem to support precisely such ancient beliefs. In the same way that Earth's rotation makes the darkest part of the night appear just before the dawn, our position in the heavens makes the darkest part of our world age appear just before our heavenly orbit begins the return that brings us closer to the light of our galaxy's core. With that return, we experience relief from the cataclysmic forces of the cycles of darkness. And just as the night must pass to get to the new day, the only way to get to the light of the next cycle is to finish the darkness of this one. We all know that while dark experiences definitely exist in our world, and we don't need to look far to find them, there's also much more to life than the suffering and the destruction the ancients foresaw and predicted, much more. Even in our time of great darkness, the polarities of peace, healing, love, and compassion are alive, well, and abundant. Our ancestors had an amazingly deep grasp of just what our experience of cosmic cycles means on multiple levels. Somehow they knew that Earth's position in the heavens would affect the physical conditions in our world, as well as the emotional and spiritual experiences that we need to embrace those conditions. Through myth, analogy, and metaphor, traditions from the Native American Hopi to the ancient Hindu Vedas reminded us that the further we travel away from the core of our galaxy, the deeper we are in the darkness, the more we feel lost, and the more out of sync we find ourselves with the fields that influence life here on Earth. They cautioned, the darkest point in our cycle, we would go so far as to forget who we are and forget our connectedness to one another in the earth. They even told us that we would forget our past. It's precisely this disconnected feeling that seems to be the consequence of the cyclic journey that carries us to the far end of our galactic orbit. It's also the fear that is spawned by such feelings that has led to the chaos, war, and destruction at the end of cycles in the past. At the end of the last two world ages, for example, the ancient Hopi described the greed and the wars that led to the loss of the very things that we cherish the most, our families, our civilization, and ourselves. Archaeological discoveries of an advanced civilization located in the Indus River Valley between what is now India and Pakistan seem to support the Hopi myths, as well as those of the 100,000-line epic poem of the Hindu Mahabharata. The site has revealed the bodies of humans that appear to be in what the archaeologists call postures of flight, suggesting that they were fleeing from whatever it was that destroyed their civilization. Students of the Mahabharata suggest that the massive text describes a great war that was fought in the valley that marks the precise location of the new discoveries. The remains are now dated at approximately 7 to 10,000 years old, placing them into the time frame of the two world ages of the past. While such discoveries obviously warrant more study, we can learn from what we do know of them so far. When we understand what the darkness of our cycle has meant in the past and why it's necessary, we begin to see the great challenges of our time in the new light. And with that light, our time in history and our response to the changes that come with it take on new meaning. With these ideas in mind, it becomes even clearer that now is the best time for us to go through such a cycle. The reason is because now is the first time we've had the understanding, the need, and the technology to reach into the realm of all possibilities and choose the kind of future that will arise from the chaos of the present. The reason is because now is the first time we have the understanding, the need, and the technology to reach into the realm of all possibilities and choose the kind of future that will arise from the chaos of the present. This is something that would have been impossible even 50 years ago. Looking closely at the stories and records that have been handed down to us for over 250 generations, it becomes obvious that those who experienced the end of the last world age worked hard to make sure that we know precisely what it means to do so. We find the fruits of their labor preserved for us today in their temples, texts, traditions, and cultures. Although the ancient creation stories, such as those of the Hopi, Hindu, and Mayan cultures, differ in specifics, they generally agree when it comes to the cyclic nature of the universe. They state that at least three great worlds have existed in the past and been destroyed before the one that we're living in today. While different traditions use different signs to tell us where we are in our world age cycle, it seems that all the signs are essentially telling us the same thing: the shift from the present age into the next one is now, in our lifetime. What sets the Mayan calendar apart from the oral traditions such as the Hopi is that their timeline for the shift ends on a specific date. While their system of calendars accurately identifies the alignment that marks the shift, a rare astronomical configuration that modern computers have actually confirmed, it's what the Maya knew about Earth's journey through the heavens that makes their story even more astounding. Specifically, they knew that during a zone of time before and after the 2012 winter solstice, Earth and our entire solar system would move into a position that is extraordinary by any standards. It's during this time that we move across an imaginary line that defines the two halves of our disc-shaped galaxy. Just the way the equator of the Earth divides the northern and southern hemispheres, the equator-like line that we cross in the Milky Way separates the top of the galaxy's disk from the bottom. As the planets of our solar system line up with one another and our sun, our crossing of the galaxy's equator also aligns us with the mysterious source of energy that lies at the heart of the Milky Way. The Mesoamerican scholar John Major Jenkins was among the first to recognize the significance of this alignment as the completion of the great cycle indicated by the Mayan calendar. Well, to be absolutely clear, this is not an event that happens suddenly in a single day. In other words, our crossing of the imaginary line that divides our galaxy doesn't suggest that we'll all go to bed on December 20th of 2012 in one world and wake up the next morning to a radically different world on the 21st. Instead, the winter solstice appears to be the astronomical marker that the Maya chose to mark the center of the transition zone, and that zone begins well before and ends well after 2012. Because of the size and distances of heavenly bodies, to us here on Earth, this alignment appears as a slow, gradual shift over a period of time. Our familiar experience of an eclipse is a perfect illustration of how such a gradual shift occurs. If you've ever watched a lunar eclipse, for example, probably didn't take long to discover that it wasn't going to be over quickly. Once it began, you could go back into the house, fix a cup of tea, make a couple of phone calls, and feed the pets before going back outdoors to see the completion of the progress. Even though the Earth is hurtling through space at a speed of about 65,000 miles per hour, on the night of a lunar eclipse, such enormous speeds aren't obvious. That's the effect of huge objects like planets moving through space at tremendous speeds across vast distances. To us, they look like they're in slow motion. So in the case of the Sun moving into an alignment with the equator of the Milky Way, the winter solstice of 2012 marks a point within the zone of a shift that actually began years ago. In his landmark work, Maya Cosmogenesis 2012, Jenkins describes how such a transition is a process rather than an event. Using calculations made by Belgium astronomer Jan Mius, Jenkins suggests that the progression of the Sun across the zone of the Milky Way's equator covers a span of time that began in 1980 and ends around 2016. Even with a margin of error of plus or minus a few years, this means that we're already well into the alignment that the Maya predicted over 2,000 years ago. What does such a rare moment in astronomical history mean in our lives today? Well, the truth is, no one knows for sure. We can't, because no one living today has a direct experience of the last time something like this happened. What we do have, however, are good indicators of what we can expect. We have facts. When we marry the facts of today's science with the wisdom and the historic records of the past, we find a story that's almost beyond belief. It's the story of a journey, our journey, that began so long ago that it's taken over 256 generations and 5 millennia of time to reach the end. Now that we're doing so, we discover that the end is actually the start of a new journey. Perhaps poet and visionary T.S. Eliot best described the irony of an end being a beginning when he said, "We shall not cease from exploration, and the end of all our exploring will be to arrive where we started and know the place for the very first time." While the story of a shifting world age based on our planet's orbit through the stars may sound like the plot of a Star Trek episode, the celestial calculations that our ancestors left to us are surprisingly consistent with the same scientific findings of today. When we put it all together, they tell the same story. And with that story, we suddenly have a new meaning for some of the great mysteries of our past, as well as the clues that tell us what to expect in our future. Fortunately, our ancestors left us everything we need to meet the challenges of a great world age. In addition to being about cycles, it's also about our ability to recognize patterns and where we are within those cycles. During the 1980s, I worked in the defense industry writing software to look for patterns in data. It was during that time that the world experienced one of the most frightening and secretive eras in history, the Cold War, between the superpowers of the United States and the former Soviet Union. With over 70,000 nuclear-tipped weapons poised to strike the largest cities in Europe and North America at a moment's notice, it was also during this time that I found myself searching for a way to make sense of the Cold War and all wars within the context of a bigger picture. Was the Cold War part of a cycle? Could the seemingly random events leading to the wars of the past actually be part of a great, evolving pattern that began long ago? And if such a thing were possible, then do the patterns extend beyond the experience of war into things that happen in our daily lives, like love and betrayal and hurt? If we were to discover that every aspect of our world is part of an ancient and ongoing cycle, such a discovery would give us a powerful new way to think of ourselves. It would imply that everything from the beginnings and the endings of jobs and relationships to the exact year when war is waged and peace is declared are all parts of a cycle, a pattern that makes it possible to reveal the conditions for the future that we've already experienced in the past. If such a pattern actually exists, then we could even take its meaning one step further. It would allow us to pinpoint an experience, any experience, from love and romance to betrayal and hurt, and find that it's part of a pattern that can be known and, more importantly, predicted. Such a vantage point would go a long way in helping us to make sense of our world. It would also be of immense value as we embark upon our journey into the 21st century and find ourselves in the uncharted territory of merging the knowledge and ideas of East and West, ancient wisdom and modern science, to solve the great challenges that threaten our very survival. Well, you've probably guessed the answer to each of my questions regarding the cycles is the same. It's yes. The reason for the answer could fill volumes, and it's the subject of this audio book. The key to such a powerful view of time and history is that we can only understand how cycles relate to life by crossing the fuzzy line that's traditionally separated science from the spiritual traditions of our ancestors. For example, when we marry the ancient understanding of time cycles with Nobel Prize-winning physicist Albert Einstein's 20th century discovery of the unity of time and space, something wonderful begins to happen. Three facts emerge with implications that change everything that we've been led to believe about our lives and the world. Fact number one, Einstein's theory of relativity forever merged our ideas of space and time into the single essence called space-time. Fact number two, the events of everyday life, things like romance, war, peace, planetary orbits, stock market fluctuations, the rise and fall of civilizations, and so on, all happen within space-time. And fact number three, things that happen in space-time follow natural rhythms. These facts carry two powerful implications that lay the foundation for the rest of this audiobook, and they can be summarized as the following time codes. Time code number three reminds us that new discoveries show that we can think of time as an essence that follows the same rhythms and cycles that govern everything from particles to galaxies. And time code number four reminds us that we can think of the things that happen in time as places within cycles, points that can be measured, calculated, and even predicted. With time codes three and four in mind, we have the reasons and the tools to think of time in a powerful new way. Rather than considering the minutes of each day as nature's way of keeping everything from happening at once, now we can think of time as a kind of code that connects the past with the future. And just as any other code can be cracked and read, the message of the ancient Mayan calendar may be deciphered and read like the pages of a book. For some people, this perspective of time is a strange way of thinking of things. For others, while it's certainly unconventional, it also makes perfect sense. The idea is fascinating. The implications are deep, mysterious, and exhilarating. While they challenge much of the way we've been taught to think of the universe, we also find ourselves powerfully drawn to such a possibility. We want to know more. We find ourselves wanting to apply this new understanding of time to the real world to make sense of everything, from the tragedies of life to the mysteries of the future, and we can. Although quantum scientists tell us that we can never predict an exact future, What we can predict are probabilities for that future. This is precisely what the existence of repeating cycles of time demonstrates. Although quantum scientists tell us we can never predict an exact future, what we can predict are probabilities for the future. This is precisely what the existence of repeating cycles of time demonstrates. Each time a cycle appears, it repeats the general conditions that make something possible rather than a precise outcome. Just as the conditions in Earth's atmosphere, for example, can create the perfect environment for a tornado without ever actually forming one, time's cycles can bring together all of the circumstances that led to an event in history without that event occurring again in the present. The key here is that the ingredients for a repetition are present and the situation is primed. The way those conditions play out, however, is determined by the choices that we make in life. To know in advance where our choices can have the greatest impact tips the scales in our favor as we complete the cycle that holds our well-being and ultimately our survival in the balance. Time Code 5 reminds us that if we know where we are in a cycle, then we know what to expect when it repeats. If we can really think of time in the universe in the same way that we think of the stuff that happens in life, as the events that fill it, then the cycles within time can be measured the same way we measure the stuff that happens. Just the way we can predict the cyclic return of a comet streaking through the universe, suddenly we can also pinpoint the year when the conditions that led to the rise of a civilization or an act of war or even an act of personal betrayal will come around again. The beauty of such an understanding is that along with the moments in time that are ripe for chaos, we can also pinpoint the moments in our future that are ripe for peace. Because all cycles are based upon natural rhythms, we can use the universal codes that govern everything from the movement of quantum particles to the shape of our galaxy in a formula that takes the guesswork out of finding the places in time we're searching for. And that's precisely what we'll do in the chapters that follow. Once we develop the ideas of time cycles, we can use our understanding in one of two ways. We can follow the instructions in this book to make our own time code calculator that tells us how to find the times in our future when we can expect a repeat of the conditions of our past. Or we can use the automated web-based version at www.gregbraden.com that does the same thing for us. Either way, we'll be able to plug in a specific year, such as the end of the Mayan cycle in 2012, to find the time or the times in the past that tell us what to expect when the cycle returns. In doing so, we give ourselves an unprecedented view into time and something concrete to anchor our expectations on for the end of the present great age. But the time code calculator is not limited only to major events on a global scale. It works for the things that happen in everyday life as well. From the joys and crises in our personal lives to the tension between nations, it appears that the conditions leading to the pivotal moments of life repeat themselves as cycles large and small and follow the same natural rhythms. To use the cycles in our lives, we must recognize the patterns, when they begin, how they play out, and how to read them. To clarify what I mean here, Time Code 6 states that the time code calculator shows us when we can expect the conditions of the past, not the events themselves. This is precisely why the time code calculator is so valuable. Along with the repeating cycles that make the conditions possible, each cycle also contains choice points, moments when the change seems to come easier and be most effective. So while the themes of global war, personal betrayal, and peace themselves may be set into a timeline, the outcome for each of these specific themes is not. As is the case with all human experience, it's what we do with the condition presented to us that writes the next chapter in our experience. The key to using our choice points is that for us to affect our future in a conscious way, we must recognize where we are in the cycle. This all begins with us realizing that we're actually living a time code of sorts, a pulsating field of energy that has a beginning, is ever expanding, and carries what scientists have called the forward march of time. It's ideas like these that trigger a cascade of questions in our mind. Does the past really hold a blueprint for the future? What could something that happened 1,000 years ago possibly tell us about today? And what about the mysterious end date of the Mayan cycles? Is there a way to look backward in time to give us an idea of what may be in store for us in 2012? These are the questions that led to the research for this audiobook. The rest of what follows is their answer. I know there's certainly no shortage of books and media exploring the Mayan calendar in the year 2012. It seems like every month, new ones show up on the bookshelves and in internet bookstores. As with any topic that strikes a powerful chord in people's hearts and minds, the new books offer very different, sometimes even conflicting, perspectives, ranging from scholarly predictions that have taken years to research, to stream-of-consciousness dictations claimed to be from off-planet intelligence. All serve a purpose. All add to the collective momentum that appears to be building as we approach the winter solstice of December 21st, 2012. It's precisely because such powerful works already exist that I had to be very clear about my contribution to the 2012 literature. What could I possibly say that has not already been said? Maybe the best way to answer this question is to state clearly what this audiobook is, what it's not, and what it offers. In the discussions that follow, together, we'll discover how the conditions for the Mayan end date of 2012 AD have already happened in our past as a fractal of what we can expect in our future. We'll see how nature's most beautiful numbers guide us to the places in the past that describe that future. We'll identify the hot dates that hold the greatest threats of war and the greatest opportunities for peace in our future. You can calculate your own time code for the key events and relationships in your life. And together we'll discover the personal and collective choice points of life and history, moments in time when change seems to come easier than it does at others. Fractal time is the result of over 20 years of research and my personal journey to make sense of the repeating cycles of life, love, and war. If you've always searched to answer the questions, does history repeat itself, and how is the future connected with the past, then you'll like this audio. The key to 2012 and our time in history is to understand the language of nature's cycles and to use that language today to prepare for the future. Ultimately, we may discover that our ability to understand and apply the rules of fractal time holds the key to our deepest healing, our greatest joy, and even our survival as a species. Fractal time was created with one purpose in mind: to read the map of time and apply what we learn as we approach 2012 and the world beyond. In doing so, we give meaning to the past while unlocking the code of life's possibilities in the future. Both opportunities that future generations will have to wait another 26,000 years to see again. Chapter 1, The Time Code Program, Finding Our Future in the Cycles of the Past. Philosopher Arnold Glasgow once said, "The future is actually the past returning through another gate." From his words, it's clear that he thought of time in terms of cycles, with the things that happen at one place in time as the repeat of the same things that have happened in an earlier time. It's not surprising that Glasgow would think of the past and the future in terms of cycles. The reason is because we live in a universe that's made of cycles. From the tiny pulses of energy generated by an atom, to the rise and fall of enormous magnetic fields within the sun, from the constant rhythm of the ocean's tides to the thousands of miles traveled by a tiny hummingbird as it migrates to warmer climates every year. Our world is a never-ending dance of nature's repeating cycles. They're part of everything. Intuitively, we know about cycles through direct experience. A woman's menstrual rhythm, for example, is governed by a 28-day cycle. It's also linked to the cyclic phases of the moon. Each day, our bodies follow the rhythms of a 24-hour period, the circadian cycle of light and dark, that governs things like when we sleep, when we're alert, when we're hungry. And although the use of 60-watt light bulbs and late-night cappuccinos has probably forever changed the way we respond to nature's rhythms, the fact is that the cycles are still there. When we look a little closer at nature's cycles, we find that each one is part of a larger cycle, and that cycle unfolds within an even larger cycle, and so on. Nested cycles of time and energy that govern the rhythms of the universe and life. The familiar experience of day and night is a perfect illustration of how nested cycles work. The hours of light and dark that we see each day are due to the way Earth rotates in relation to the sun, a cycle that takes about 24 hours. How long the light and the dark of each day lasts, in turn, is linked to the way Earth tilts toward or away from the sun while it's rotating. These are the cycles that create the seasons of the year, and how much the Earth tilts in one direction or another is part of an even greater cycle that determines how long the seasons last over thousands of years. While the experience of day, night, and seasons offers a clear example of nature's cycles, there's much more to them than the length of a day or when summer begins. In the words of poetry, Ralph Waldo Emerson described our relationship to nature's cycles within cycles simply and beautifully. Our life, he said, is an apprenticeship to the truth that around every circle another can be drawn, that there is no end in nature, but every end is a beginning. Emerson's words and our understanding of cycles both lead us to the same question that must be asked. If nature's cycles are really everywhere, could it be that everything from our personal relationships of romance and business to our global relationships of war and peace, everything from the light of a baby's birth into this world to the darkness of September 11th, 2001, is part of the great cycles that we are just learning to recognize? And if so, can we prepare for the future by recognizing the past? If such a relationship really exists, it changes everything we've been led to believe about our world and ourselves. We may well discover, for instance, that things as varied as the frequency of our accomplishments and failures, the success of our relationships and careers, and even the length of our lives, stem from cycles that we're only beginning to understand. And with our new understanding, we may also find that we're no longer the victims of a mysterious fate that we attributed so much of our experience to in the past. To explore such a relationship, however, we must begin by recognizing the patterns that surround us. With my feet dangling just inches above the water beneath me, I sat motionless on a log near the stream behind our house. In the summer of 1965, I remember breathing the hot, thick Missouri air as the last light of the day flooded the hills surrounding me. Everything changes at night in the woods of northern Missouri. Although I could still see the twilight in the sky above, the dense growth of moss and vines hanging from the ancient forest blocked the sunlight from the ground. I stared into the darkness and waited. Experience had taught me that patience and silence are the keys to studying anything in nature, and over the years I'd gotten very good at both. At first I saw only one out of the corner of my eye. Then there was another, and another. Suddenly they were everywhere. It was as if someone had just flipped a switch that said now, and the fireflies of summer were all around. Watching them perform their mystical dance of movement and light was an after-dinner ritual that I look forward to every year. But for me, it was more than just watching the lights flash and disappear, much more. It was about something hidden, something secret and mysterious. It was the rhythm and the cycles. It was the patterns. As a child, I looked for patterns everywhere. Sometimes they were silly ones, like how many times the lights on our Christmas tree would flash off and on before they went dark and began the next cycle, or how many cars of the same color there were in a row of a grocery store parking lot. At other times, they were patterns that seemed to call out for someone to find them, like the number of times a firefly would flash its eerie glow before it rested and began again. Surrounded by hundreds of them, I remember thinking that there must be more to the light show than just the random flashes on a summer night. Maybe the lights were actually a code of some kind, I thought. Maybe each flash was carrying a message from nature itself. Because insects can't speak, maybe the lights were the way they were communicating, with long and short bursts of light representing the dots and dashes of a language like nature's Morse code. If I could just count the flashes and the time between each pause, Maybe I could read that code. Well, I never found the Firefly code, at least not in the way I'd originally suspected. While the summer light shows did turn out to be coded signals of nature, they were part of something even more primal and mysterious than I'd imagined. In a high school biology class, I later learned that the flashes of light I'd seen on those hot Missouri nights were actually part of a mating ritual, a sex code, from male fireflies looking for their perfect female firefly mates. Sitting on that log, I'd placed myself right in the middle of a huge dating ceremony that was driven by the ancient and primal urge to reproduce. Although the reality of the firefly code may not have materialized, the idea that time itself could be part of nature's code did. On my 7th birthday, my mother supported my fascination with ancient history and gave me a gift that I would cherish well into my adult life. It was a book by C. W. Suram describing lost civilizations that had been rediscovered in modern times. It featured Greek, Egyptian, Mesopotamian, and South American archaeology. The title of the book was Gods, Graves, and Scholars, and it had a profound influence on my way of thinking of the past that continues to this day. I was especially awed by the fact that such powerful civilizations with such advanced knowledge, like the ancient Maya, could have existed long ago and then simply vanished to remain lost for centuries. As I studied the glossy photographs showing the roofs of the Mayan temples peeking above the dense Mexican jungles, I wondered what it was that they knew that we've forgotten, especially when it came to their idea of time. With discoveries that range from new revelations of the Mayan calendar to the profound mathematics of fractal patterns, we can now begin to answer that question today. As an adult, I recognize that the patterns I'd studied as a child are more than just random oddities. I realize that our world is made of those patterns, and not just random patterns here and there, but patterns within patterns that form order and structure. Many of nature's patterns can be measured and predicted easily, like the crescent-shaped dunes of sand that continuously drift through the Great Sand Dunes National Monument high in the mountains of southern Colorado, for example, or the branching patterns that we see in the veins of an oak leaf, or as the water from a garden hose forks and divides while it runs downhill. At other times, however, the patterns of nature are not so easy to see, like the invisible winds that move an entire mass of air across the continent, or the psychological forces that drive the world's stock markets. But whether we can see them or not, the patterns of nature are everywhere. It became clear to me that if I really wanted to understand how things work in the world, I need to understand the patterns they're made of. Well, during the last years of the Cold War, I found myself working as a senior computer systems designer in the defense industry doing just that. Perhaps not surprisingly, one of my first assignments was in a specialized area of computer programming, writing pattern recognition software. One day, while I was searching for patterns in nature to use as a model to store data, I came across the work of a scientist, philosopher, from the early 20th century named R.N. Eliot. Before his death in 1948, Eliot had written a powerful synthesis of how natural laws seem to govern so many aspects of everyday life, including nature's cycles. It was that book, modestly titled The Major Works of R.N. Eliot, that forever changed the way I thought about the universe, civilization, and most importantly, time itself. What I found so fascinating about Eliot's work was that he not only recognized patterns and cycles in nature, he also found practical ways to apply what he had found in the real world. A cornerstone in Eliot's work was one very special number that is found throughout our bodies, our lives, and even our world in ways that I had never been told about when I was in school. It's the number called the golden ratio. In words that were clear and direct, Eliot showed how the golden ratio applied to everything from the number of males and females in the natural population to the economies of nations. Well, it was during the same time that a specialist in stock market forecasting, Robert Prechter Jr., discovered Eliot's work as well, recognizing that global economics in the stock market are indicators of the investor community's optimism or pessimism, all part of natural cycles. Prechter took Eliot's ideas one step further and created the most successful market prediction tool in the history of the New York Stock Exchange, called the Elliott Wave Theory, and it's still used today. The key to the success of the Elliott Wave Theory is found in two basic assumptions. The first is that the market will always advance and decline in precise intervals. These are the waves of the Elliott Wave Theory. The second assumption is that if you know where the advance begins, you can calculate when and how much the declines will occur. My thinking was that if life in nature follow the patterns of such a code, then it made perfect sense that time itself should follow the patterns as well, to form a time code of sorts. And just like the intervals of the stock market, if we could recognize nature's time code, then the cycles it creates could be measured and calculated. In other words, if we know when a cycle begins and we know the pattern that it follows, then we also know where and how it will end. Perhaps most importantly, if we know the conditions that a cycle brings, then we also know what to expect each time it reappears. It took many years and many attempts to find a way to apply what I'd learned about cycles to the events of our world. Once I did, there was no turning back. The reason is because nature's time code works. What it reveals is both sobering and astounding. To step back and recognize the patterns that we've lived in the past and the ones we're living right now is possibly one of the most empowering things we can do as individuals and as a civilization. It's as if our willingness to recognize the interconnectedness of nature's patterns is rewarded by the opportunity to participate in the very cycles the patterns reveal. In my way of thinking, that's nothing less than the miracle of a second chance. Maybe the best way to illustrate how the cycles of time repeat in predictable ways is through an example. And what could offer a better example than to find that the defining event for the early 21st century, September 11th, 2001, is actually part of a larger cycle that began 60 years before the towers of the World Trade Center even collapsed. The sound of the phone jolted me from the bizarre sleep that often follows the 13-plus hours of an international flight from Los Angeles to Melbourne, Australia. As I sat up in bed, a stream of nonstop questions flooded my mind. Where am I? What time is it? Who could possibly be calling me in Australia before the sun even comes up? In the faint glow of a streetlight shining through a crack in the window shades, I found the phone on the nightstand beside me. Pressing the button that was flashing, line one, I didn't have to wait long for the answer to my question. Immediately, the frantic yet familiar voice of a friend on the other end of the line launched into a barrage of information that made little sense to me. There was no good morning or how are you or any of the typical greetings that come from friends and family half a world away. The first thing I heard was, "Turn on your television, now! Something's happening, I don't know, oh God!" Reaching for the TV's remote, I flipped through the channels of the screen suspended from a bracket in the corner of the room. Though the stations weren't familiar, the skyline of the city they were showing was. Each channel was showing the same horrible images that looked like something from the finale of a Hollywood thriller. Due to the time difference, while it was dark in Australia, the images I was seeing showed the smoke-filled skyline above New York City on the morning of September 11th, 2001. Along with the rest of the world, I was both shocked and mesmerized by what I was seeing. I felt disoriented, uncertain, and mystified by the images that were flowing nonstop on every station. Quickly I dressed, bolted for the hotel lobby, and I was not prepared for what I saw. When the elevator doors opened, there were people everywhere, all jammed together, vying for a view of the huge television mounted above the lobby's reception area. Some people were red-eyed and crying openly. Some were moaning. Some were simply standing in the stoic silence that comes from seeing something that makes no sense, yet that we know is real. As I made my way through the crowd onto the street, I could see masses of people in motion everywhere. Although it was early, cafes had opened and appliance stores had turned on every television in their showroom windows so the people on the streets could look on. as America experienced one of the most horrifying days in its history, it was also a turning point for the world. Quickly, I walked along the street, through cafe after cafe. Everywhere it was the same. Confusion, uncertainty, fear, and the non-stop images on the television. I found myself asking two questions over and over. The first was simply, why? Why would anyone do something so bizarre, so brutal, so heartless? The second question was not as simple. It took me back to my childhood thoughts of seeing the world as patterns. While my mind tried to make sense of what was happening, I suddenly found myself reeling from my own question. Could we have known? I heard myself whisper under my breath, if life and world events really follow patterns and cycles, is today part of a pattern? Is there any way that we could have prepared for this day or even prevented it? The crowds that filled Melbourne's busy cafes spilled out of the buildings and onto the sidewalks throughout the morning of September 11th, 2001. For as far as I could see, there were people everywhere doing their best to go about life as usual. But the morning was anything but usual. As office workers and students were going through the motions of the day, it was clear that they were stunned and uncertain. Two times within one city block, I'd seen drivers turn into oncoming traffic as if there was no one else on the road, only to be jolted from their driving trance by the sound of screeching brakes and the horn from the car that was bearing down upon them. In the midst of the confusion, I cautiously crossed from light signal to light signal, making my way back to the hotel. My mind darted between staying aware of the chaos swirling around me and the events I'd seen earlier in the day. A single question kept repeating in my mind. Could the horror of the World Trade Center and Pentagon be part of something greater? Beyond terrorists, politics, conspiracies, was there a bigger pattern unfolding in front of our eyes, a pattern that can only be seen when we step back and look at the big picture from a different perspective? It would not be until 7 years later that I would have my answer, and in the clarity of that answer, a pattern would emerge that was so obvious. My question changed from could we have known to how could we have missed it? My thinking was that there must be a very good reason why ancient mystics, such as the Vedic and Mayan timekeepers, dedicated so much energy and resources to studying time. Because their perspective of history's cycles was so different from our views today, and both have been found to be accurate, the two ways of thinking must be parts of a greater wisdom. So it would make tremendous sense to combine the wisdom of our past with the best science of today to give us a powerful new way of thinking of life and ourselves. Merging everything I'd learned while searching for patterns as a computer programmer with what I knew of the ancient Egyptian, Hindu, and Mayan views of cycles, the golden ratio, and nature's fractals into a model of time, a time code program, I found a powerful window into the events of our past as well as our future. The key is that time repeats in cyclic patterns and that each repetition is similar to the last, a fractal expression of the past, repeating with a greater intensity. The time code program can be used in three different ways or three different modes to reveal the cycles of specific events. Mode 1, for example, tells when we can expect the conditions for something that has happened in the past to repeat again. Mode 2 tells us where to look in the past to discover the conditions we can expect for a specific future date, such as 2012. And mode number 3 tells us when we can expect the conditions of a personal experience, either positive or negative, to repeat again in our lives. For the events of September 11th, 2001, I used mode number 1. While my book, Fractal Time, details the exact procedure for each time code calculation, for the purposes of this audiobook, I've summarized the findings here as part of our discussion. So to find the conditions that may have led to such a pivotal date in the past, all I needed was two pieces of information. First, the input date. For this example, we will need a time in the past when the seed of an obvious pattern began so we can discover when it will repeat in the future. And second, the total length of the present cycle we're exploring either the 5,125-year-long world age or larger cycles that define even larger ages. The first piece of information required some research. To discover what pattern September 11th might be a part of, I needed a date that may have started the cycle before the World Trade Center attacks. To have the certainty of a date that could not be questioned, I needed to find one with the same characteristics, the same patterns that played out on September 11th. Although the controversy and unanswered questions regarding September 11th, 2001 remain in the minds of many people to this day, the one thing that is generally agreed upon is that the United States of America was attacked on that day. Regardless of who, how, or why it happened, there is a consensus that America and Americans were the target of something that can only be described as a vicious attack. For most people, there was not even a hint that something of such magnitude could possibly even happen. So it's fair to say that the events of September 11th, 2001 took the nation and the world by surprise. It was clear that the words describing the theme that I was searching for was one of America being surprised and attacked. Knowing that past conditions repeat themselves in cycles, a search of history revealed a date that unquestionably matched the criteria. In this case, it even matched the exact words of surprise and attack on America used to describe those events. The date was December 7th, 1941. The day that President Franklin D. Roosevelt forever marked in the psyche of the world as the Day of Infamy. On that day, America's naval base in Pearl Harbor was attacked by surprise and 2,117 American lives were lost. It was also the day that the United States of America officially entered World War II. So after settling on this date, the year 1941 became the first input point for the time code program. The second piece of information is the length of the cycle within which everything is happening. Well, this was easy, because all of recorded human history has happened in essentially the same cycle. Perhaps it's no coincidence that that cycle is also the great cycle of 5,125 years described by the Mayan calendar. So although this may sound like an arbitrary choice, there are two facts that make the Mayan calendar unique among the timekeeping systems of the world. First, that the calendar is the single most accurate system of tracking nature's cycles of galaxies, planets, and our relationship to the sun known until the 20th century. And second, the cycle that we're now in is approximately one-fifth of the bigger cycle that describes the precession of the equinoxes, our 25,625-year-long journey through the 12 constellations of the zodiac, commonly rounded to 26,000 years. The input into the time code program was ready. The seed date was 1941. The cycle length was 5,125 years. With all the information at my fingertips, I began the calculations. Immediately, two dates emerged. Each date indicated the next time when America could reasonably expect the same themes of surprise and attack as it had experienced on the historic Day of Infamy. History shows that 1984 marked a time of some of the greatest tension between the United States and the former Soviet Union. The threat of a nuclear exchange was so great during that year that the hand of the famous Doomsday Clock, maintained since 1947 at the University of Chicago by the board of directors of the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists for the purposes of keeping the world informed regarding the threat of global catastrophe, was moved to only 5 minutes before the worst possible time of midnight. The move was only the second time since the clock was put into place that the world had been so close to atomic war. But it was not until the end of the Cold War, however, that we really knew just how close. In the early 1990s, Russian authorities declassified the records describing an event that brought us even closer to that war than we had known. In September of 1983, The Soviet military mistakenly shot down a civilian jumbo jet that strayed into Russian airspace. All 269 people aboard Korean Airline Flight 007 were killed, including United States Congressman Lawrence McDonald. During that time, the tension between the superpowers was so high that the Russians feared America would view the mistake as an act of war, assuming it was only a matter of time before the United States attacked in retaliation. The recently declassified records show that Russia had actually planned a preemptive attack against America, a nuclear attack, to preserve their first strike advantage. Well, for reasons that could be a book unto themselves, history will show that, fortunately, the attack did not happen. The key here is that the conditions for a surprise attack against America did exist and were in place in 1984, just as the time code program predicted they would be. The next date on the screen showed a time when America was not so lucky. The program calculated that the next time we could expect the conditions leading to a surprise attack would come precisely when it did, in the year 2001. This illustrates a beautiful example of how fractal patterns play out as events in time. The surprise attack upon the United States in 1941 appears to have planted the seed for a cycle that continues today. The time code program simply used the principles of fractal patterns and natural cycles to tell us when we can expect the conditions of the 1941 surprise and attack to repeat. While the relationship between these dates certainly deserves additional study, there are three facts that we cannot discount. Number one, based on a documented seed date, when the conditions of surprise and attack were set into motion, the time code formula successfully identified the next two times when America could expect those conditions to repeat themselves. Fact number two, on both of the predicted dates, a plan to surprise and attack America actually existed. And fact number three, on one date, the plan was actually carried out. The data is clear. While this example is for a single, graphic, and horrible event that is now part of our history, it's just that, an example to illustrate how events within a cycle can be related. The time code calculator works for other events as well, from the joys and crises in our personal lives to the war and peace between nations. It appears that the conditions that lead to the pivotal moments of life repeat themselves as cycles. Now we must ask ourselves, what do such patterns mean for us today? What can they tell us about our future? Can nature's time code shed any light upon the frightening predictions for the mysterious date of 2012? Can the program give us a solid basis for the beliefs of many New Age gurus, self-help prophets, and every major religious and spiritual tradition of the last 5,000 years? Well, in the chapters that follow, we'll answer each of these questions in detail and learn to think of time and the things that happen in the world from a powerful new perspective. Then, with our new understandings firmly in hand, we'll apply what we know to everything from our personal lives to our global future. For such a perspective to make sense, however, we've got to think about our world from the perspective of those who dedicated their lives to understanding vast cycles of time, the timekeepers of the past. And what better way to begin than by exploring their view of time in the great world ages of the past?